mingling kids. So whether or not we have 8 students present or 15 present that day, we need a full-time teacher assigned to that classroom. In Multnomah County, our actual costs per student next year are about $9,000. So we do support weighted funding for these young people at 1.5 our ADM, as well as additional student weight to help us cover our costs. Another aspect of House Bill 3619 that Joanne mentioned is the elimination of out-of-county billing, which is something we have long supported. Currently, we bill at a daily rate for students from other counties that we serve within our educational program. Last year alone, we billed for 507 students residing in other counties, totaling over $163,000. This process is time-consuming, it's cumbersome, it's often really difficult to collect the funds because of disputes over school district boundaries and so on. We've devoted countless efforts to tracking down where these students come from across the state. And then those districts are billing Multnomah County for our youth served within their facilities. So we have this duplication of effort and funding that's being exchanged through the mail that is really unnecessary. So we do support eliminating billing for out-of-county youth, and we could use those resources then that we currently dedicate to that process to provide more direct service to students. We also support ODE's rulemaking authority to extend the school year. As Joanne mentioned, some programs currently offer a 190-day school year. Others offer 220-day year. And this is an inconsistency that allows youth different opportunities, I guess, based on where within the state they are held. And we submit that all youth in custody deserve and need year-round school. When the school year ends, these students are obviously still detained, and there's very, very little programming available to them. These are young people. We know they're already behind in their skills, behind in credit toward graduation. 30%+ of these young people are eligible for special education services. They are also frequently abuse victims, gang involved, substance abusers. Many grew up in poverty. I know that you know the population that we're serving and the complex needs of these young people. These are kids who need every opportunity to stay in school for as long as we can provide schooling for them. They need to catch up, they need to learn, they need to practice new skills, they need to move toward a SIM or high school graduation or a GED. They also need every opportunity to learn socialization and life skills and to have time to reflect and address why they are where they are. And hopefully they'll learn from that. Having these youth in custody is our opportunity, really, to intervene and hopefully to deter them from a path that they have already undertaken and to give them at least one lasting, successful school experience. This is a lost opportunity during the summer months within some county facilities. Stable funding and ODE rulemaking authority would move us closer to consistency across the state, and it would maximize our chances of reaching youth who need us the most. We all know that education deters crime and that there's a strong correlation between the level of education and recidivism. It is in all of our best interests to keep these young people in school, to see that they're well educated, to see that we take advantage of every opportunity to provide them with skills and a positive school experience that can foster changes in attitude and an improved lifestyle. It may even rekindle in some of our students a sense of hope for the future that is unfortunately lost for many of the students that we serve. It's an opportunity that we have to seize, no matter how long or short the stay is within detention, no matter whether it's during the school year or during the summer months. This bill moves us in the direction that we need to go to best support school programs within detention facilities. It also moves us to where we need to go to best serve the students within these facilities. It provides us with stable funding. It reduces unnecessary and costly duplication of effort. It gives rulemaking authority to the ODE. It creates standards for programs across the state, and it allows for weighted funding and an extended school year for our students. And this bill has the full support of the Multnomah Education Service District. Thank you. And we can respond to any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Questions for these witnesses?
Sure.
Representative Leakes.
Just two or three quick questions. Just remind me, I've forgotten, what's the normal contact days for a high school student routinely right now? What's the state requirement? Is it 170?
I'm sorry, the number of
contact days required for a routine student to high school is 170?
I believe it's 178.
178 days. So you're well past that. I just wanted to make a point to the committee that the average student is not in school 220 days. These kids are at higher risk and are having difficult problems. I spent 10 years on the school board, so I have some education in this area myself. Are you going to offer year-round school to these kids when they're in the detention centers? I mean, is there any time a child's going to be in a detention center at certain times of the year that they'd be there for more than a few days and they would not be in an educational program?
Yes. Representative Bates, Mr. Chair. Yes, right now in Multnomah County during the summer months, there is no education for youth, and right now we're holding ballot measure 11 kids for an average about 100 days.
Hold up, Mr. Chair. So to make sure I walk away with understanding of this, across the state now, not just in Multnomah County, we have the same problems across the state. When a kid's in a detention center for any significant length of time, no matter what time of the year it is, they're going to be in an education program under this. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes.
One last question,
yes,
Chair.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. This has been capped at 350 kids. Is there any reason that cap was picked at 350? I mean, what's the thinking here?
We have
kids, I mean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, that was based on the average daily population of all of the local detention facilities across the state. There are actually more local detention beds in the state, but right now the average daily population, and we don't expect within the next biennium that it would go above 350.
Follow-up question. You said average. That means it'll be above and below at different times. What's the range look like?
That's actually, average is the wrong word to use. Basically, that is what we expect is the peak usage.
Thank you.
And Representative Shetterly, I will add that we have two members from the ODE here with us this afternoon to respond to any questions that you might have.
Good. There's nobody had signed up from the department, and I was hoping to get some testimony. Anybody else?
Sure.
Yes, Representative Beck.
I am curious as to why or whether there was any thought given to having the governor budget this as money above and beyond the state school fund rather than carving it out of the school fund. Was that discussed before the budgeting process?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, I think the Department of Ed would be best to answer that.
All right, let's invite the Department of Ed up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Shetterly, members of the committee, Representative Beck. The reason the...
Name for the record.
Oh, excuse me, John Pendergrass, Oregon Department of Education. I supervise the Youth Corrections Education Programs. This mechanism for funding that's recommended under this bill was chosen because it really reflects the current system, except we're taking out about three or four very time-consuming and labor-intensive steps that include the bill back to the resident district, the sending of attendance forms to the state school fund and to the resident district, and then the resident district having to send a copy of those forms to the state school fund. But this is a wash, pretty much, in terms of cost to the state school fund. No one felt it was realistic to look for a general fund set aside to fund this program. So this is sort of like the status quo with about three or four administrative steps removed.
I guess I have a question about that, and maybe Steve, for you to respond. Is your revenue impact here says that, I guess this would indicate something other than just status quo, because it is changing the distribution formula.
It's setting money aside for this juvenile detention program, basically off the top, and then distributing the rest to school districts, so that there would be money directly to the State Department of Education to pay for these costs, but then the districts wouldn't be paying those costs.
Okay. Representative Bates?
Make sure it's clear. The way it works a couple of different ways. Sometimes if one of your kids from the district goes into a juvenile detention center, you get billed directly for that. Sometimes it comes out of your ESD money. It's really confusing and difficult to follow. And as a school board member, we have to kind of grapple with where the money was and where the kids were. Mm-hmm. And it's really a burdensome thing to go through. It probably chews up some money just getting that part of it done. So this looks like something that would be simpler to do, as much as I can tell. I mean, it looks like it's a step forward, so as far as I can tell here. Am I correct?
There's a slow pitch for you if you want to hit that one.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Bates, that is the case. Currently, with this billback, the billback is to the resident district, and sometimes the resident district is a district that the youngster never went to school in, so they get bills they haven't been able to plan for students they may not have had in their system, and Susan Ritchie mentioned, then we get to the situation of trying to collect. And the district that runs the program, if it's not able to collect, eats to the loss. So it's really a cumbersome system, a lot of administrative steps, a lot of professional and clerical time goes into this, and that's on the financial side of this. That's really what this does, is it simplifies the process and takes a lot of that labor intensity out of it, and keeps school districts from getting a bunch of surprise invoices that they haven't budgeted for.
Representative Shetterly and Representative Bates, it's also duplicated because it's happening at both ends. They're billing us while we're billing them, so it's actually an exchange of funds. And as I mentioned, we've devoted a great deal of time and effort to collecting on students that we serve within our facility from other counties. We have one person dedicated almost full time to this process. And as I mentioned, those are resources that we would really like to shift to provide direct service to kids instead of the unnecessary clerical work involved in collecting.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anybody else here to testify on 3619? I have a question about, maybe this will instigate some testimony. Question about the amended language regarding the transferred teacher position. Now we've got you on board. Which seems to be, this was amended into the bill in the Education Committee, so this wasn't part of the original proposal, as I understand. Do you want to tell us about that?
For the record, Tricia Bozak with the Oregon Education Association. Mr. Chair, yes, the language was amended in the House Education Committee. The reason being, it is consistent with other state merger, school merger law, state public employee transfer law. It's consistent with that. These employees would not lose their status. Things like sick leave, their status as a contract teacher, those types of things when the programs are transferred on paper.
Okay. I'm just a question about the mechanics of that section. No teacher shall be deprived of employment status solely because of this transfer, but then it also follows at the end that, however, the district to which the program is transferred is only obligated to hire the displaced teacher in such a manner that it would complement cost. What it basically says is that the receiving district, the transferee district, mm-hmm. isn't obligated to hire.
Well, it says that if...
How can it be both?
Well, it says that if it poses, I think, a financial burden, or I forget what the language is, I don't have it.
Complementary cost-effective staffing.
Right. That was the same. That tracks the identical languages that was in the state merger law when school districts are consolidated. Yes, it does. And as my understanding was, that was not a problem, not problematic with anyone. It doesn't guarantee a rate of pay or anything like that. All the things that would apply in the new district would apply, but it does allow them to keep sick leave so that, for instance, a 20-year employee wouldn't start all over again in that regard.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Bozak? All right. Anybody else wish to testify today on House Bill 3619? We've got the school funding formula bill, the omnibus school funding formula bill, coming up on Wednesday. My inclination, I think, is to look at this in light of that bill for now anyway, since this addresses a school funding formula, and try and keep all of these formula issues moving together so we don't lose track. That seems to make sense to everybody. Okay. So thank you for the hearing and the overview on House Bill 3619. We'll close that public hearing today. Let me ask, is anybody here to speak on 2780? We passed by that because there was no one signed up to testify on that earlier in the meeting. Okay, still none. What?
There's nobody here for the bill.
We'll go to 2521. Who is that? Is that Ed? Okay. We'll be in recess for long enough for Ed to...